This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us. This is the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs with Tishiel Eek and Lim Soo. And so earlier we were talking about how the coronavirus disease has got a new name, COVID-19. But now we're going to turn our attention to Charles Darwin. It is his 206th birthday today. And, you know, ever since Charles Darwin published his radically insightful book on the origin of species, he has been the focus of commemorations and tributes by scientists, artists, scholars and free thinkers throughout the world. So, you know, we're celebrating that today, International Darwin Day, and we're asking you a question about that also on social media.
Yes, of course, all of us, I think, have some awareness of Darwin's theory of evolution. So we're asking you, do you believe in evolution? 58% of you say yes. Surprisingly, 34% of you say no. Small number, 8%, don't seem to know what it is. So you can continue to take that poll, send us any thoughts at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or call us 0377-332900.
Yep. So today again is International Darwin Day, and that was introduced to, you know, inspire people throughout the globe to reflect and to act on the principles of intellectual bravery, perpetual curiosity, scientific thinking, and of course a hunger for truth, you know, that was embodied in Charles Darwin himself.
So a little bit about Darwin's life. Charles Robert Darwin was born on the 12th of February back in 1809 in Shrewsbury, Shropshire, the fifth of six children of wealthy and well-connected parents. Young Charles had a quietly Christian upbringing, but his family life was actually one of being very open to new ideas. So his grandfathers had both been important figures of the Enlightenment. There was Josiah Wedgwood, an industrialist and anti-slavery campaigner, and Erasmus Darwin, a doctor whose book Zoonomia had set out a radical and highly controversial idea that one species could transmute into another.
And following in the footsteps of his father and grandfather, Darwin secured a place at Edinburgh University to study medicine. But he did not make a good medic, and this was long before anaesthetic, and Darwin found the brutal techniques of surgery too stomach-churning for him to handle. But there was an upside, so Edinburgh was one of the best places in Britain to study science. So it attracted free thinkers with radical opinions that would not have been tolerated in places like Oxford and Cambridge. So among other things, Darwin heard speakers talk about the latest theories of transmutation, as evolution was then known.
Transmutation. No. Who knew, yeah. But so abandoning plans to be a doctor, Darwin now considered a career in the church. When he was age 18, he went to study divinity at Cambridge. And though he held, you know, fairly conventional beliefs in God, Darwin wasn't particularly keen on this new direction. But training to be a clergyman meant he had plenty of time to pursue his real passion, which was biology. So he spent much of his time collecting beetles and walking in the fens. And he graduated in 1831, but before he could take a job as a cleric, the chance of a lifetime would come his way. So Darwin's tutor at Cambridge recommended him as a quote-unquote gentleman naturalist on a voyage around the world on that very infamous HMS Beagle. And of course, Darwin jumped at the chance.
And over the following 5 years, Darwin actually visited four continents on the Beagle, spending much of his time on land, collecting specimens and investigating the local geology. He also had long periods with nothing to do but read and reflect. What a life!
And gentleman naturalist.
Yes.
Traveling the world.
That's right. You know, collecting beetles. So books such as Charles Lyell's recently published Principles of Geology had a profound impact on him, making him think about slow processes which occur over vast periods of time. During the trip, Darwin also suffered terrible seasickness, and it really was the start of a life dogged by illness for him.
And leaving South America behind, the HMS Beagle made a 5-week stop at the Galapagos Islands, which is about 600 miles off the coast of Ecuador. So the Galapagos Archipelago is a collection of small volcanic islands, each with a distinct landscape. So contrary to popular belief, Darwin did not have a great eureka moment on the Galapagos. He studied finches, tortoises and mockingbirds there, although not in enough detail to come to any great conclusions. But you know, his steady accumulation of observations was building up already.
So here's a clip from the YouTube series called Open Mind, which is a quick summary of Darwin's trip and how he discovered the engine that drives evolution, and that's natural selection, and that stirred up a cocktail of ideas that were within the reach of many people.
Charles Darwin had always wanted to study nature, even though his father wanted him to be a doctor or a priest. Defying him, young Darwin embarked on a ship sent to chart the coasts of South America because he wanted to collect and study exotic animal specimens. What he found on the 5-year trip would lead him to question his beliefs. What if species weren't as permanent and perfect as everyone thought? In Argentina, Darwin found fossils of what looked like giant armadillos and sloths. Clearly, these animals had existed at some point, but they didn't anymore. This made Darwin suspect species had changed over time, in line with some existing but unpopular theories. He had also seen mockingbirds, and when he got to the Galapagos, he found different mockingbird species on the islands, distinct among each other and from the mainland species. Because of their sheer similarity and closeness, Darwin hypothesized that they had a common ancestor whose specimens had flown to the islands and changed there. However, something was missing. How did this change happen? Darwin's inspiration came from an economist, Thomas Malthus, who believed that humans reproduced faster than their food supply. Darwin realized that animals always breed beyond their available resources, so the individuals who were better at surviving would be the ones to reproduce. This way, they would pass on any traits that had helped them survive. Everything fit together, but there was a final hurdle. Darwin, like the society he lived in, was deeply religious, and all the evidence he'd found contradicted Christian beliefs. It would take him over 20 years to write and publish his revolutionary book, On the Origin of Species, but when he finally did, it became one of the most influential scientific treatises of all time.
So that Galapagos stopover was a brief anomaly near the end of an expedition devoted mostly to surveying the South American coastline. So Darwin's theory developed very slowly and very secretively. And The Origin of Species, and let's have the full title, On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. That is the official name. Okay.
We have to say that whole name.
Didn't appear until 1859. And many scientists, along with some Victorian clergymen, resisted its evidence and arguments for decades afterward.
Sure.
And, you know, the reality of evolution became widely accepted during Darwin's lifetime, but his particular theory with natural selection as the prime cause didn't triumph until about 1940, after it had been successfully integrated with genetics.
So On the Origin of Species was a bestseller worldwide and went into multiple editions. And with each new edition, Darwin strengthened his arguments. By responding to critics, he was able to build a more robust case, and in the fifth edition, he introduced the phrase survival of the fittest, borrowed from philosopher Herbert Spencer, and that phrase has become shorthand for Darwin's idea. And unlike natural selection, it doesn't imply a divine being selecting anything. Mm-hmm. By now, Darwin was describing himself as an agnostic, a term coined by biologist Thomas Huxley. And more than a decade after The Origin of Species, Darwin found the courage to publish ideas he had once only hinted at. So in The Descent of Man, he presented an unequivocal account of human evolution. The book was another challenge to Christian orthodoxy. Yet in the decades since Darwin had gone public, his ideas had gained acceptance, and Victorian society remained deeply divided about the idea that humans shared an ancestor with apes. Mm-hmm. But actually many respectable thinkers were now what they called themselves as Darwinists. Mm-hmm.
And so troubled by ill health, Darwin worked until the end. He died a virtual recluse, surrounded by his wife and a few devoted friends. And in his final months, Darwin was tended by his wife, Emma, who had stood by him despite their differences in religious beliefs. Realizing that his powers were fading, he described his local graveyard as, quote-unquote, the sweetest place on earth. Yet his followers, including the indomitable Huxley, had grander plans. And so he was buried at Westminster Abbey.
Wow.
And Darwin's works remained interdisciplinary throughout his life. His theories were developed by crossing geological observations. You know, he had an excellent knowledge of botany, population studies, and analysis of the zoological world. So his legacy, you know, of evolutionary theories can be felt in all branches of biology and beyond, in paleontology and in economics even. Mm. And Darwin was not the first to theorize evolution, but he was the one that carefully, you know, analyzed evidence and explained the process of natural selection with unique clarity and strength. So many have been inspired by his work, including Sir David Attenborough. And in this upcoming clip that we're about to play, Sir David talks to famed scientist Brian Cox about his admiration for the achievements of Charles Darwin and how On the Origin of Species inspires him in his work in the natural world. So this clip is from a series called People of Science, which is hosted by Brian Cox on the BBC.
David, why did you choose Charles Darwin?
He inspires me because he made sense out of the natural world. And not only just physical sense of why animals have antlers or why birds have fine feathers, but to suggest the mechanism which led to all these multiplicity of forms. And that's a huge change in the mindset. So Darwin is the founding father of really scientific zoology and botany.
And it's interesting to look back on his early career and his motivations, really, or his inspiration. How did he get there?
He was absolutely mad about collecting beetles. And when you do start collecting things, you say, well, this one is different from that. But is it more different or less different from that? And that means you start building genealogies. That was the trigger which led him to these extraordinary thoughts.
Yeah, it seems like one of a very pure expression of what it is to be a scientist, that it's actually understanding the natural world is all that matters.
I am really entertained by a sentence that he wrote in one of his letters in which he says, every time I see a peacock's tail, I feel sick. But he feels sick because he can't understand how it could have been that individual bird putting all that energy into growing this vast and immense tail with this complex pattern and colours and one thing and another, how it could happen. And the thought that he couldn't understand it was what made him sick. But in the end, Darwin explained sexual selection.
Back then, that's a bold statement. Was he a bold character in that sense?
He was intellectually bold in himself. But he wasn't aggressive because I think he knew that the majority of the society would find it deeply blasphemous to suggest that we were descended from simian ancestors. The more you know about Darwin, the more you realise that he was enormously considerate. I mean, he had these strong, steely convictions, but he was gentle with people. He was a courteous, kind human being. He was an extraordinary man. That's a marvellous portrait of him, isn't it, in his old age.
This is 1868.
Yeah. And there's his beagle.
What was the route that they took?
Well, they were commissioned to go down to the farthest tip of South America and do a survey around the Cape Horn. But then, of course, they decided to go home by crossing the Pacific. And so he then, on that way, calls upon the Galapagos, where the moment of enlightenment strikes him, if one is to believe the story.
What do you think would fascinate Darwin about the world today?
Oh, undoubtedly, the discovery of genetics. The key that he really needed to have was the physical basis in which characteristics were handed from one generation to the other. And he postulated things he called gemmules, which would do that sort of job. He had no idea what they were. But to a certain extent, you could say that he, as it were, predicted there would have to be a thing like that, which we now call chromosomes, with DNA, which carry DNA from one generation to the next.
He was a wonderful writer as well, wasn't he?
Absolutely, sir. I mean, that this book, this is the first edition of The Origin of Species. And what is marvellous about it is that anybody can read any page and it makes absolute sense to them. It's not full of jargon. It's full of argument and observation. And that's another reason why I admire him so much. There is grandeur in this view of life, with its several powers having been originally breathed into a few forms or into one. And that, whilst this planet has gone cycling on according to the fixed law of gravity, from so simple a beginning, endless forms, most beautiful and most wonderful, have been and are being evolved.
And over on Twitter, we were asking you, do you believe in the theory of evolution? Almost 57% of you say yes. 34% of you say no. About 9% don't actually know what the theory of evolution is. Over on WhatsApp, Peter has messaged in also his support for the theory of evolution. And we also have a tweet from Kavindran, who his thoughts about evolution is that it's even though it's called a theory, he believes it's because scientists are humble. What is a fact they're actually calling a theory, although something like evolution is the way of life and nature. It is not some kind of conspiracy theory and does not need to be disputed. So if you have any more thoughts, you can continue to tweet us.
Yeah, so, you know, tweet us at BFM Radio, send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899, or, you know, in the future, you can always call us at 03-7733-2900. And if you'd like to find out more about Charles Darwin Day, which is today, of course, you can head to darwinday.org. You know, some very cool resources there, you know, some very interesting learning resources as well. You know, if you want to get your kids, teach your kids about
That's right.
I mean, the reason we wanted to cover this was because, I wanted to cover it was because we went for Ahmad Fuad Osman's exhibition at National Art Gallery with my little daughter who's 4.5. And suddenly in the car yesterday, she was asking me about the Men and the Apes. And I remembered that, and she remembered actually
the exhibit.
Of that, one of Fuad's exhibits, one of his art pieces, works, which is The Theory of Evolution. Mm. So, you know, amazing things, you know, how what children actually take in and, you know, what they're...
And the questions that they ask.
Yeah, so two things. Go take them to art galleries and teach them science as well.
Take them to museums as well.
Exactly, yes. I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today's show. You can look us up on Facebook, search for us BFM The Bigger Picture if you'd like to drop us a message. And you know, if you miss any part of the show, you can always download the podcasts at bfm.my/dailydigest. You can search for the podcast on the BFM app. We're also available on Spotify. For now, it's The Specials with Monkey Man. You've been listening to The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.